KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, we're going to kick around a little NFL overreaction or reality, but don't forget tonight at Jake's, or I guess this afternoon and tonight at Jake's, you can go see the G-Bag Nation off of Main Street in Frisco, and then once their show is over, the final first round of Fan Phenom. Then tomorrow morning, Sean and RJ at the Firehouse in Red Oak, 547 Methodist Street. They're going to be doing the cooling towel giveaways. And then, for selfish reasons, I'll say the main event. 2401 Preston Road in Frisco. We will be at Uncle Julio's tomorrow. And I believe we've just learned of a new giveaway we'll have going on.
I just tweeted it out, adding the majors on the Twitters, if or X, whatever you want to call it.
I call it Twitter.
It is Tolo shirts, black or white, and it says Tolo right there in the middle. Long sleeve, by the way, so we're getting you ready for a Texas winter because, you know, long sleeve but thin because it's not really that cold here. So, Tolo shirts, dude. If you want them, you got to come up and while they last because those things are going to be gone fast.
I like it.
See you at Uncle Julio's for margaritas and shirts.
Absolutely, and chocolate pinatas. All right, NFL overreaction or reality. Tyreek Hill will get traded this season. He is now on track to play. I think we have discussed the potential perils for the Dolphins in the season to come. So overreaction or reality, Tyreek Hill is going to get traded this
season. During my fantasy draft, my friend had one of the greatest lines.
Oh.
It was time to get for him to draft, and Tyreek Hill was right there for the taking. And he was the best receiver available, and he's looking at it, and everybody goes, I mean, he's right there. And he goes, I know, but he's such a little bee.
And
that is the like the mindset of like that's how fans feel about him is he has this potential to be amazing.
Sure.
But if he's unhappy, man, like you could it's all over him. And I think the Dolphins are at a place I said that I think McDaniels could be the first coach fired.
Yeah.
And therefore, if that's the case, they would start unloading players to unload some monies and start looking towards the future in a rebuild. So I could see it. I say reality.
Kevin Walker, overreaction or reality? Tyreek Walker. Nope. Tyreek Hill.
He loves your last name so much.
Obviously. Will get traded at some point this season.
Has to be reality at this point. That Dolphins team is close to just getting blown up to bits.
All right. Now, this one, I want to make this very clear. I understand how negotiations work. I'm not telling you how you should feel one way or another. Overreaction or reality. The contract saga with Micah has made you like Micah less.
Overreaction. Okay. Because I don't believe it. You know, like I'm not in that mind. I feel like this is played up a lot but maybe it is. Maybe I feel that way because I see it so much.
Yeah.
But I just also feel like it's just been the Cowboys have been that way. It seems like a lot of contracts end up being not this messy. This is extreme. This is more messy than we've seen before. But it doesn't feel like there's any real personal shots that have been thrown out there. It feels like there's all some surface level stuff.
You don't think so?
I
was just trying to think. It felt like maybe he took it personally in the presser when they were like, I mean, plus he just got hurt and, you know, I don't know if that counts.
Does that count? I understand you brought that up early on that you felt that was a personal shot.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's something that's very surface level and not too deep. But I don't think that it's gotten to a point though, Kevin, where I'm still tired of it because I would rather talk football than contracts any day of the week
for sure.
But that's not necessarily his fault because Jerry Jones is involved in this too. But there are two sides in this, and I didn't pick a side on either one of them.
All right, Kevin Walker, overreaction or reality? This contract saga has made you like Micah Parsons less.
Overreaction, and I may be in the minority here. I would say it's made me respect Micah more, taking it to Jerry this way.
You know what? I asked you that question earlier, and I'm glad that you said that, Kevin Walker. Does Micah look a little more resilient in this going up against a very well-known, very successful businessman in negotiation? And instead of saying, you know what, like a lot of other people could have folded already, and Mike is like, no, I'm sticking to it. I'm going through every one of these steps in order to try and make this negotiation work. And a lot of times, whenever you have somebody with that kind of power, that kind of pull, people are just like, I got to give up. And he's still sticking to it.
Now I'll take your phrase. I might be in the minority here. I think I always get the sense it's so much harder for people to put themselves in the shoes of the owner than the player. And I think that's why the players get dumped on in this situation sometimes. Because, like, it's harder for people to be like, well, if I had a $3 billion company versus, you know, I played football and I played it for the love of the game and you're getting paid $40 million. I think that's why not as many people, like, stand up for the players when they stand strong. Plus, it feels like people already don't like Jerry Jones. And so now they're like, so, Micah, I need you to be the person I like and just come play for my football team.
I need you to put the white hat on and be the... And Jerry's said often, I'm not the white knight riding in saving the town.
And I'm not saying that's fair to Micah whatsoever. I just get the sense that that's why maybe like some people don't dig in as much and like, go player, I hope you get all the money that you want. NFL overreaction to reality. Amari Cooper still got some juice left. Now this is the specific phrase that he used as he reunites with the Raiders. Do you believe? Amari Cooper last year, 547 yards on 44 catches for 4 touchdowns. Do you think he might have something left?
I do. The year before that, he had 1,250 yards. And so I know last year was kind of, Cleveland, chaos place. B, he got thrown in Buffalo and then was never really truly healthy, I didn't feel. I still think he has a little something, so I went ahead and picked him up off the waiver wire, and we'll see. I think Pete Carroll knows what his offense wants to be, and I think Geno Smith knows what he is now.
Amari Cooper is 31. How is he not 38? Doesn't it feel like we've been talking about him forever? He is 31 years old.
He walks like a 50-year-old man.
I could see that. All right. Kevin Walker, overreaction to reality. Amari Cooper, he's still got some juice left.
If he does, Brock Bowers is going to be able to help him out a lot. I think this is a place where Amari could not have to be wide receiver one. He'll benefit from that.
Ooh, okay. Spicy. I like it. NFL overreaction to reality. Trey Hendrickson's return means the Bengals are once again a bona fide AFC contender.
Were they when he was on the team last year?
No.
I mean, offensively, they were. Their defense was miserable.
You know what I think about a lot with the Bengals? They're a theoretical contender where I'm like, oh, yeah, no, they should be good. And then you watch the defense and you're like, oh, yeah.
Now I see why.
That's why you're not good.
They have struggled so much. Yeah, that's where I am with them. I think that offense can keep them flying. You know, I think they can. But it's their defense isn't going to be any different, I don't think.
NFL overreaction to reality. Bengals, contender, yay or nay?
Overreaction. That defense just is not going to cut it. It doesn't matter if Burrow puts up 41, they're going to give up 43. It's just going to happen.
Do you think there's any chance, like, if he broke, let's say, 2 passing records, yards and touchdowns, but the Bengals went 5-12, that he could win MVP?
Yeah. I think so.
But he'd have to, like, break those records, right?
Yeah, 70 touchdowns.
Even that.
6,000 yards.
I could see him throwing for 6,000 yards and 70 touchdowns and them still having a losing record.
He's just I don't know what to do, guys.
I could. By the way, Sports Business Journal, in case you wanted to know, says that the NFL preseason had its highest overall viewership in 7 years.
Really?
So, you know, Mark Cuban, I know he said that they were done for. But
NFL's over.
Yeah, and really quite worked out that way for him now, has it?
Has he commented on that since?
No.
Like, has he been like, hey, you know what? I really missed the mark.
You know
on
what?
That one.
And maybe he did, and I just haven't seen it. I just, like, it was really weird. Overnight, Mark Cuban says he thinks the 2006 NBA title got stolen for the Mavs. And I was like, yeah, he said that like 10 times. In the past 10 years, I feel like we all think that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think that was as much of a shocking headline as apparently some other people did. NFL overreaction or reality. The preseason makes you think the Bears' offensive rise will take longer than previously thought. Ben Johnson has slammed his offense numerous times. I mean, it's sloppy. It's not good enough. And Is there any part of you that thinks like, oh yeah, this is probably going to take some time?
I mean, it's Jimmy Johnson had that style.
Yeah.
And it still took time for him to get the talent. I think they have the talent, though. That's the other thing. I think they still had some place pieces they had to fix. But I thought they had some, I think they have some pretty good talent in certain areas. But man, doesn't he have the skins on the wall to say that to them?
Yes.
Because I just was the offensive coordinator for one of the best offenses in the league. So do you believe me or not? Y'all have to do these things in order to be better. And
right.
If you don't, and that's the thing though. Jimmy Johnson had the hammer. He had the power to be like, at that time, he had the power to be like, and if you don't get with the program, you're out of here. And I wonder if Ben Johnson has that same kind of hammer. I think salary cap has always taken away that power from coaches. Man, maybe that was the reason Jerry really wanted the salary cap, so you could take the power away from coaches to just cut players. Whoa. And get rid of them. I think he's probably right. What was the question?
Oh my God.
I said a lot of things about Ben Johnson there.
That the Bears' rise offensively will be more difficult than previously thought.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true too.
I'd say reality.
It'll take some time.
Also, they're just a really young bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a little bit. And that doesn't mean they have to give up on them.
Okay. That's fair. All right. I just mentioned that Anthony Richardson couldn't even get the thumbs up for a short yardage package. So NFL overreaction to reality. Anthony Richardson has played his last meaningful snap for the Colts.
Overreaction.
Okay.
If something happens, they might go, you know what, we got to turn to you. Injuries happen all the time.
That's true.
You know, maybe there's a meaningful play. But then again, are there any meaningful plays and meaningful snaps for the Colts?
Wow.
Or are they just going through a season and waiting for their coach to be fired?
You know what? I do kind of think that sometimes.
There are some teams where you're just like, that coach didn't. He never had the right shake.
Yeah. And
it was never going to work for him.
All right. Kevin Walker, NFL overreaction to reality. Anthony Richardson has played his final meaningful snap for the Colts.
Reality. I think there's a market out there where Richardson could maybe be worth something. I don't know what that something may be. 3, 4, 5, somewhere in that pick range. I think they would probably just trade him off and get what they can out of him.
Okay. I like that. Now, we got time for one more, right?
Sure.
All right. NFL overreaction or reality. Jared Goff is better than Jalen Hurts. Now, we've been running through the NFL player top 100, and I thought these two were interesting in particular because Jalen Hurts is at number 19. And Jared Goff is at number 15. So obviously they're really close on the list. NFL overreaction or reality. Jared Goff is better than Jalen Hurts.
Immediately I go, what are you talking about? They're not in the same. What's the conversation here? So far, Jalen Hurts has not surpassed 23 passing touchdowns. Now I understand he also is a running touchdown monster. Jared Goff the last 2 years had 67 total. He's passed 30 touchdowns multiple times in his career. His quarterback, his rating 111, 97, 99 in the last 3 years. Jalen Hurts rating in the last 3 years 103, 89, 101. So it feels like Jalen Hurts is very good managing this thing. And I would say, just on thought, that Jared Goff is a bus driver. But then I look at some of these numbers, I'm like, man, he drives that bus pretty fast.
Yes.
But Jalen Hurts works well within the confines of what their offense is. If I was going to take a... You're setting me up. See?
Oh!
You've been setting me up this entire time.
What?
I'd take Jared Goff.
Okay.
And that's because of you.
I didn't even say anything.
And the fan text.
Okay.
Although I feel a different way.
Oh, what? Don't Skip Bayless me. Tell me your real opinion.
I probably would take, if I was starting a team and I had to choose between the two, I'd probably take Jalen Hurts because of the ability to run. Is it so much of what Jared Goff does relies on his arm, and Jalen Hurts has a little combination of both, and I like that.
NFL overreaction reality. I'm still not sure how we fell on that. Jared Goff is better than Jalen Hurts?
I'm going to say reality. And the way that I came to this, because it's a really good discussion, is
I was listening to Corey just then.
That was part of it. How would Jalen Hurts work for the Lions and how would Jared Goff work for the Eagles? I think Jared Goff could thrive with the Eagles. I don't know what an offense would look like with the Lions with Jalen Hurts at the helm.
And Goff has proven he can be good in another offense.
I think he's pretty versatile.
With McVay, who's a really good play caller, and Ben Johnson. Now, I don't know. Maybe the play caller for the Lions isn't as good and Jared Goff struggles. We'll see.
All right.
We'll find out.
Oh, okay. Yes, we will find out. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we move into the expressway. The 2025 Rangers will never allow us to stop believing. And also, in studio, we will have SMU icon Craig James. All of that next right here on The Fan.
Here's Higashioka. And Kyle swings and lifts one high into the air, deep left field. Ward going back. He's at the wall. He leaps. It's gone. Nope. Higgy taking advantage as he slugs one out of here. The third three-run home run for the Rangers tonight. The Rangers are at 20, leading now 20-3. And for Higashioka, his 10th home run of the season, giving him now 10 or more home runs in five consecutive seasons.
And that would give the Rangers, that would be the final score as well. They win 20-3. We're going to have SMU icon Craig James in studio in just a few minutes. But some numbers from the Rangers bludgeoning of the Angels. Now, going into this game, they were 23rd in the league in runs scored, 26th in scoring slugging percentage. I'm not saying one game changes that, but here are some astounding stats. Adolis Garcia, Jock Peterson, Kyle Higashioka all had five RBIs. Rangers scored their most runs since Minnesota, playing Minnesota in 2011. According to ESPN research, and not my research, it was just the 10th instance of three teammates recording five or more RBIs in a game since that became an official stat in 1920.
Oh, wow.
So in 105 years of baseball where they cared, this is only the 10th time it has ever happened. Now, for the Angels, it was just the fourth time in franchise history the Angels had given up 20 runs or more. They previously gave up 21 runs to the Mariners in September of 2007 and the A's in 2018. And so this has been an issue against divisional teams, but just a destruction on all levels. And then I don't want to leave out Jacob Latz, because this is another, I know it didn't end up mattering as much, but this is another spot start for him where you're like, great, we really needed that.
Yeah, and that's what Bochy told us on Wednesday was, you know, this is an opportunity for him. Yep. And, you know, we trust him in this place as well. And he was telling us, you know, this is where we were what we were looking ahead for. So, like, that is nice that he gets those opportunities and takes advantage of them. I'm very interested to see what the future is for him and how, you know, how we might manage working with him a little bit more down the road. That might be something we see.
Absolutely. And for the Rangers, as we get this all set up, Craig James is here. We're going to talk with him in just 1 second. That is 5 of 6 for the Rangers. We talk about it. Still 4.5 games back in the wild card. Now 6 games back in the division, and that's the biggest thing. As long as you keep winning games, it feels logical that you will pick up ground somewhere or another, and obviously you will not lose any ground along the way. So positives right there. Now, another positive. We bring in, I've described you all morning, and I hope this is acceptable, as SMU icon Craig James. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's great to be here with you guys. If you're an icon, that means there's darts that can come your way.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you've never heard anything say anything negative about you or anyone involved. I can't think of a single instance when that might have happened. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And since we were just talking about the Rangers, how debilitating do you think it would be to be out in the baseball field and see that your team has given up 20 runs?
Well, you know, it's just a kind of a new thing in baseball, you know. So did they put in the shortstop to pitch?
Yes, and he threw the ball 40 miles an hour.
So is that really good for baseball?
No.
I don't think so. And the Rangers have done a great job of staying respectable and at least giving themselves a chance at the end here. I grew up in Houston, so I'm an Astros fan. Gross. I'm a Rangers fan, but I'm a Red Sox fan.
It's a weird combo, Patriots, but I like
days.
It.
Well, in my New England days, at that time, Roger Clemens was playing for the Red Sox. Roger and I grew up playing against each other in high school, so he'd come to my games, I'd go to his, so I sort of became a Red Sox fan.
That's pretty cool. That's actually really cool that you were able to be there at the same time, considering. Yeah,
and we're still friends. You know, the Rocket Man, he could bring it, man. He could throw that heat. And I hit a home run foul ball on him one time.
Okay.
And, so it was just a few feet.
It was the furthest foul ball you ever hit.
Ever hit in my life. And the next pitch was a curve ball, and I was a strikeout victim. So,
and that can happen like that. Because one time I remember I hit a foul ball that went just over like the football field, and I was like, man. Don't throw that pitch again. And my coach was like, yeah, absolutely throw that pitch again. It'll be another foul ball.
Do you happen to know offhand if Roger Clemens is pumped that the president stepped out and said he needs to be in the Hall of Fame right now? It's not every day you get the president to be like, put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think Roger's in the mindset that, you know, he's just kind of moved on from that. And that okay. It's just not going to happen. And if it did happen, then that would be one thing. But I several of those guys who have not been admitted, you know, it was what it was back in those days. I know I watched Roger Clemens work hard to be the best he could be. And within that era and what all was happening within that era, he wasn't the only guy, if he were doing anything, to have been doing something. So the guy was amazing. He was a great pitcher.
Yeah, actually, you know, going to the football side of it, Eric Dickerson, your friend, we were sitting down years ago talking, and he had made a comment, and this is one of my biggest regrets in journalism history. And he was like, man, when you round that corner and you hit a linebacker, you knew which one was on steroids. And I was just laughed, and I went on, and I didn't follow up with, like, who? And that's the biggest regret I've ever had. And that's those eras, there were a lot of different players that understood.
A lot of different things happening. Going on back then. I remember my rookie year, I averaged 4.9 yards a carry, rookie of the year, and had a good season. The next year, I'd run for well over 1,000 yards, and I had been the Lombardi Offensive NFL Player of the Year. And the next year after that, our guys decided on the offensive line to get clean and get off steroids. I couldn't get back to the line of scrimmage. I don't think I lost my ability. And I was like, after about halfway through, I was like, hey, guys, y'all may want to think about getting back on that stuff.
See, and Kevin,
you're glad for them for making the right decision, yeah, but not so glad.
Yeah,
for
not yours. While I'm playing.
Yeah.
That is we talk a lot about the Cowboys' offensive line and how much of it is the blocking and how much of it is the running back's responsibility. What is that balance? Well, how beautiful is that sequence that it has to be for those things to work?
If I were building a football team, I would build it starting with the offensive line. The offensive line has to block. And if they're not blocking, I don't care how Barry Sanders may get away with it. But there are very few running backs who could get away without an offensive line. And the running backs are important because they have to hit it and go. But I'm glad to see that in football, the teams who are really good in the NFL and in college football, football has not changed in that you got to run, you got to block, and you got to tackle. And if you can't do those things, I don't care if it's the 1950s or 2025, you're not going to be successful.
Yeah, that's the game. That's how it works.
Now, going back, because we have a whole lot of ground to cover, hopefully, if that is okay with you, as we lead up to the Pony Express Award, which obviously you and Eric have helped put this together with the Pony Express Huddle Foundation, and that is super cool. I want to get to that in just a second. I'm hoping, because I just don't remember your thoughts about this, why go the route of the USFL when you came out of college and how that transitioned into the NFL?
Okay, so I just said this on the elevator coming up. I have to stay within the context to remind myself why I did that. Made that really dumb move. Bill Walsh had the number 9 pick in the first round with the 49ers, and he kept calling me saying, please don't sign, I'm going to take you. Well, okay, here's what happened. I go as a courtesy to the Washington Federals. They had drafted me the fourth player selected in that draft. It was an honor to be drafted that high. I sit down at lunch with this ownership group, and within 2 hours, I realized they were very serious about trying to sign me. And in those days, I knew the slotting process financially in the NFL. First rounder, you're going to make around $250,000 a year. And these guys had doubled that immediately on the table. And so I was the highest paid player to enter pro football at that time. And it was a financial deal. But I also enjoyed the kind of the pioneering concept of being able to be a part of something new.
Yeah.
And I wasn't alone. There were a lot of great, great football players.
Herschel Walker, Jim Kelly, Reggie White. Like, there's a plethora of awesome people that went through there.
Yes, there were. A lot of really good players. Unfortunately for Washington, our ownership group, there was an imbalance there. We had other guys spending money on a lot of players. Our guys forgot to buy an offensive line. You know, we forgot to get a lot of other pieces that were pretty important. We had a really fun team, but we didn't have a very good team. It was the worst team I ever played on in my life.
Wow.
3-15. Hey, I won a state championship undefeated in Texas as a senior in high school. I had two college championship teams. I had played on a Super Bowl team. So, I mean, I was used to kind of, you know, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, my middle son is, he's playing middle school football right now. And they've won a lot of games. Like, his team has been very fortunate. They're very good. And he's like, "That's so easy, Dad." And I'm like, "It's not as easy as you think. But y'all are really good. And it's fun to watch. And it makes it a lot more fun to play that kind of game."
Well, the Dallas Cowboys here, we're watching 30 years of absence, right? Mm-hmm. To tell you and show you how hard it is to get back. Our Super Bowl year with the Patriots, the next year I thought we were going back. We were a better football team. We went out to Denver and got beat by John Elway. And the point I'm trying to make on that is you got to get lucky. And it's really hard to repeat in professional sports.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when you talk about, like, whether you got lucky or not, obviously the year before in the Super Bowl, you go up against a team that still many people believe is at least a top three team in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, the Chicago Bears, they had the it factor. And not only that, they were unique on defense in their scheme. And Buddy Ryan was their coach. Mike Ditka was the head coach, but Buddy was the defensive guy. And this whole idea of the Super Bowl shuffle and the Jim McMahon quarterback. We're in the Super Bowl in New Orleans that year, and the word got back to us and our team that the Chicago Bears were out on Bourbon Street partying all week. We were going to bed. We had a curfew at 11 o'clock. We were getting in bed and going to sleep. And I thought, man, they're going to get blown away. You know what? We're going to hammer their fanny because they're out partying. So after the game and later on, as I look back on that, I was like, "Oh, the next time I play in a big game, we're going to go party every night. And I'm not going to sleep and just have fun." Arguably one of the best defenses in the history of the NFL.
For sure.
You know, Mike Singletary, they had some great players.
Steve McMichael, who unfortunately just passed away.
Yeah. And they were unique. Richard Dent. They had a lot of, I tell Richard when I see him now, I had an illustrious game that day. I had 5 carries, 3 yards, 1 fumble. And that fumble was by Dent. I said, "I helped you get that yellow Hall of Fame jersey." You know, give me credit.
Now, you had mentioned, so we talked about the Super Bowl. You mentioned the championship game for Texas high school football. I just want to run a little experiment real quick. Hey, Corey, what high school does your son go to?
He goes to, my oldest goes to Plano Senior.
Okay. And what was the team that you guys beat in that state championship in 1978?
Them Plano Wildcats.
Corey
Majors.
Are you
trying to cause conflict with me and the guests right now?
About the fact that the Plano Wildcats have 7 state championships, but if not for Craig James, they could have had 8. That could have been your kid's school.
I got to give credit where credit's due. They were the better team that day.
Okay, you weren't even born then. I was not born.
Now,
just one more question about that game. At the time, there was about 30,000 people, give or take, for that game at the Astrodome. I'm sure you were used to high-level games, but did that amaze you at all to see 30,000 at the Astrodome? Were you like, "No, we had a couple like that"?
Yeah, no, I did. And Plano was a result of that. I mean, they brought a lot of people down.
Great traveling
team. To the Astrodome. And so it was a surreal atmosphere for us to play in that game. And we were a fairly young, new high school. I say to this day, it was the best team I ever played on, including making it apples and apples. But
yeah.
I mean, we were 15-0. We ran the old wishbone. You couldn't stop us. We had undersized guys, well coached, but it was just a great team. And if I could go back and play one more year of football, it would be my senior year of high school.
Yeah, wow. I hear a lot of guys say that too because of how much, especially if they were winning, how much they enjoyed that group and those friends.
This summer was blessed to have gone into the National High School Football Hall of Fame in Canton.
Congratulations.
And up there on that stage with a lot of great players like Ray Lewis and Steve Atwater, and there, every one of us said the same thing. If we could go back, it'd be one more time at that.
There was a Plano player that I had talked to who eventually made it to the Super Bowl, and a reporter asked him, "Hey, what's it like to get ready for the biggest game of your life?"
Rex Burkhead?
No, it was not Rex. But he goes, I already played the biggest game of my life. It was a Texas high school championship game. And I just love that, like, that kind of vibe and everything. It's the Super Bowl. And you're like, no, yeah, I already played that. Yeah. We did that already.
We covered some high school sports before we got to do this. So we have a lot of love for that part of the game, too. I'm going to get somewhere with where I'm heading here. You had an opportunity you had a contract offered by the Yankees out of high school.
Well, actually, the Phillies. They didn't technically draft me, but they offered me first-round money. At that time, $120,000, which was a huge amount of money. And I was so far down the road, they knew that I'd been the high school player of the year and that I was committed to SMU. So a guy named Doug Gassaway was the scout, and he was a legendary guy. And I remember Doug, he's since passed, but I deliberated over that. I was like, man, $120,000, which back then was a huge amount of money for a free baseball guy. And the Yankees, I could have played after my junior year of college, but I was at that point so far down the road in football.
Did you, well, that's the was there a different passion for football over, or did you see a financial future that could be different heading towards the football path?
I passed on the Phillies out of high school because of one thing. I had a girlfriend at SMU a year ahead of me. I was in puppy love. I'd started dating her when I was 15. And I just couldn't see me on a bus in minor league baseball. I'd have been an 0-for-40 route, man. Wondering what the heck is she doing in Dallas?
Mm-hmm. You know, okay, gotcha.
I was honest with myself, right? I was like, that ain't going to happen, man. So 43 years later of marriage, 4 kids and 9 grandkids, that turned out to be a pretty good decision.
Had it not, would you have occasionally been kind of bitter about that? You'd been like, oh, I could ruin my baseball career. No, I'm absolutely glad that worked.
Kevin, the reason I was kind of navigating towards that was because at that time, SMU did have some unique ways to recruit. And we know the history on that. We know the conversations there.
To be fair, so did A&M. We just failed at getting
they did it differently.
So did Texas, so did UCLA, yeah. USC, Baylor, every one of them.
I got a little audio from a guest that was on our morning show a couple days ago. And his name's Josh Pate at ESPN. And he covers college sports. And he had an interesting perspective on where SMU is right now.
I think SMU is as aware of their existence as pretty much any program around. Who's a really good comparison? Oregon, I'll tell you, is a good comparison here. They are not similar. Like, they're not apples and apples to compare against each other. But from a principled standpoint, Oregon, a long time ago, realized we are tucked away in the Pacific Northwest. There is not, in any given year, a single 4-star recruit in our state. We are going to have to leverage Nike, really, really flashy uniforms, and national recruiting in a hopes of competing. And they've done that. That is being aware of oneself. The University of Georgia does not have to think the way that Oregon thinks, but they're trying to get the same result. At SMU, they were aware, for instance, that we're going to have to do something different. We're going to have to bend over backwards even to get that P4 affiliation. And they did. They kind of paid their own way in. And now they had immediate return on that investment in year one. I think the follow-up question, which is fair, and it's one I'm asking too, is will you have staying power? And this year, they don't even have to be in Charlotte, but if they're in the ACC championship picture again this year, to me, that goes as far as anything last year, because you know as well as I do, a lot of folks last year are looking and saying, hey, that was a great story, but it was mainly a product of schedule. If you guys would have played a harder schedule, you wouldn't have been there. Which you can't prove a counterfactual, so there's no way to know if that's right or wrong. But there is a way to handle your business this year and then look back and say, all right, well, now what? We played the tough schedule. Now what?
And so that mindset of having to be creative because you're not a Georgia program where it's just like, oh, I want to go to Georgia. Being in Texas, recruiting against all the big schools in Texas too, SMU's up against something a little bit different.
So here's the parallel. Oregon had Nike, SMU has Dallas.
Yeah.
Okay, Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
In 1979, I got fired up about coming to SMU because of my girlfriend, but really because of Dallas, that campus, that education, those opportunities there. Dickerson, all of our great players that came here in 1979 came because of enthusiasm for all the above. I knew immediately when we got back into a major conference that we'd be right back where we are recruiting these great athletes. If you're a great athlete, you want to go where there's a vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing against College Station. One of my daughters is an Aggie. There's nothing against the Red Raiders. Two of my boys are Red Raider graduates. There's nothing against any of these other schools.
It ain't the same. I went to A&M. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's the same.
It's not this big city.
And so and Nike's not the same as Dallas. I mean, we've got something here that is lasting. But in order to do that, everyone can offer you the $1 million to go play football.
Yep.
Or baseball or basketball. Or if you're a great softball pitcher, go to Texas Tech and you play in a national championship game, right? That was a great investment.
Fact.
Okay. So you can all everybody's offering money, but they can't offer Dallas to go along with it. Or our campus and the afterlife that comes with that education, if you really put yourself to it. Everyone has life after ball at every university around America. We try to act like it's the uniqueness of SMU. No, it's not. What is unique, though, is the group of people that you're assimilating with over 4 years and getting that education. I'm in the real estate business, and I do business with Red Raiders, with Aggies, Longhorns. We have a lot of those. But there is a group of SMU alums that they are kind of influential,
and they
can make decisions and do things. And so that's why SMU is not going to just be a flash in the pan. And then to go along with that, yeah, and on top of it, you got a head coach who can assimilate those 40 new faces every year, Rhett Lashley.
Yep.
Rhett's a unique coach, and he's just a perfect fit for where we are right now.
And what's that level of pride or that next level of progression? SMU's ranked 16th to start the season, highest in a preseason poll since 85. They just finished a season where they were 12th, highest in a final poll since 84. So you're seeing some parallels to the golden years of SMU. What do you think about that progression, or what's your personal level of pride in that?
It's going to be a harder year, tougher season. We don't have the schedule that we had last year. Nobody knew Florida State was going to be bad like they were last year. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are different this year. This is a tougher season. Kevin Jennings, though, is returning, and we're going to build around that.
That's awesome to have a quarterback returning that you can say, okay, we're comfortable. We know we love this star.
And he is a star. And they've got an offensive line that they didn't start with last year. So there are some things that are good there. We don't have the defensive line that we had. Now, like other schools, we have a lot of possibilities. And all these guys that have transferred in with stars. But that doesn't mean you're going to be a good player.
Right.
Who's going to be the Florida State team this year? Who's going to be the Indiana team this year? SMU should have been in the playoffs. So should Alabama last year. I mean, Alabama probably, I'm being honest about it.
Yeah.
So this year, if the three of us are in the committee and we're voting on it, and it comes down to that scenario this year again, SMU's not going to get the nod. So SMU knows that. They've got to go out and earn it and win on the field.
Kevin and I have this ridiculous plan that it doesn't need to be just this many teams. Every year it could be different. Maybe this year it's 16. Maybe this year it's only 4 that deserve to be in. It's a ridiculous plan, but
before they expanded out the playoff, I really think we should have had like a flexible playoff, because there were years when you're like, we need a 5th, and there are other years you need a 6th. I understand for scheduling purposes why it didn't happen, but it was always a dream of ours.
Yeah,
I was an AP voter for a long time, and I used to easily lay up on the top 4. It was easy. And then they get to 5 through 8, 9, 10. You know, okay. Okay. But then from 10 through 25, you'd be like, flip it up, and you know, it's a coin toss.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really changed
that
much. There's still the top 4 or 5 or 6 teams. You really know who they are. I know I threw out this idea the other day to someone. It's create kind of like an NIT. I don't think a 30 team playoff works.
Yeah.
I mean, because those guys are not going to, this is football.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just wasting a Saturday somewhere. So, you know, but 12 teams, you could have number 12 that could be a Cinderella.
And I did like the idea of having those first round games on campuses. I thought that was a tremendous idea for the vibe and everything. Now, we're talking with Craig James, as if you didn't know, right here on 105.3 The Fan. Can you tell us about the origins of the Pony Express Award and, you know, what is the goal of this? Who does this award go to?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So Eric and I have remained really close friends. I love the guy. He loves me. We're brothers in Christ. We have a similar background and thought process. And so this award recognizes a tandem, teammates working together. In a we era, it's nice to have this, or a me era, it's nice to have this we award. And so you're really looking for the two corners, the two linebackers. It could be two running backs. You know, it could be a quarterback and a wide receiver. So we said, let's recognize these teammates that are out there working to make themselves better and therefore the team better. It doesn't mean they may be the best guys out there.
Yeah.
Our semifinalists last year, two of them were linebackers from the University of Buffalo. I don't even remember their names.
What a fascinating dynamic, considering the winners were two players that were two of the best all year long in Hunter and Sanders.
Yeah, and Shadur and those guys. That was an obvious. I think this year it's going to be. And this year we have a list that we're kind of looking at, but by October the 1st, maybe we'll find out who's going to go with Arch Manning. You know, will it be the two running backs, or at Ohio State, who's going to go with, say, the quarterback? Is it really going to be Jeremiah Smith and Tate?
Jeremiah Smith's amazing.
Phenomenal athlete, right? There's great players. Georgia doesn't have one player on the Walter Camp Player of the Year list, preseason list. That doesn't mean Georgia doesn't have great players. By October, somebody from that team probably is going to jump out there and get on that list. So we need to wait and be patient to find out who it is. But the award recognizes the teamwork of a top tandem, and it's voted on by players in the country in college football, which is unique. That's kind of like the NFL. When I was told I made the Pro Bowl, I knew it came from my peers. That really made a big difference to me.
Yeah, that's what Troy kept saying in that documentary was the respect of my peers, my team, my coaches. That meant more to me than any of the other things. Mm-hmm. That's what I always feel whenever I talk to players, is that's what they're seeking.
Yeah.
That respect.
And there's nothing wrong with the media. The media, I was 23 years in it with you guys, and we see a lot of games that other players don't. But when the players from your own grouping votes for you, that's just something that's special.
Now, in terms of you and Eric Dickerson helping bring that award kind of back to the forefront, I know you guys were obviously close. Life takes you in different directions. Did you guys stay close the whole time? Or if not, what has helped you kind of reconnect?
It's interesting. We have probably a 15 or 20 person text group of SMU guys.
Sure.
And we yuck it up all the time. Eric and I the first time I met him, I was 18 years old. I was still at Houston Stratford. Eric was about 40 minutes away in Sealy. I drove out to see him to say hello before we came to Dallas in SMU.
Wow.
And I knocked on his house, on his door, and they said, no, he's not here. He's at the car wash. And I go, where's the car wash? Well, in Sealy, there is only a car wash at that time, right? So I drive over there, and there's this guy with a big smile. And he's got his glasses on, a big old fro going, and washing that gold Trans Am. We cracked up and laughed, and from that day on we've been friends. We never had a cross moment with each other. That's hard to believe. And the fact
we
pushed each other, we shared time, we both wanted to win, and that was important.
All right, I am really, really fascinated by what you just said. Not that the whole interview hasn't been captivating, but
that's been awesome.
There are times when, how can you explain how you stay close with somebody that at times you're competing with? Like, I get you're all in the same team, but there can be times, playing time or whatever else, that is the person that you're competing with. Like, how does that bond stay so close in that scenario?
Well, Eric and I really do have the same faith. You know, we're brothers in Christ, and we really, that has bound us for life and eternity. Yeah. So that's the foundation. Number two, the respect that we have for each other. He's one of my smartest friends that I have. And I'm not talking about going and doing a geometry test or anything. I'm talking about just in life. If I've got questions, I can ask Eric. He's really a good sounding board. And I just loyalty is important to him. Loyalty is important to me. And I know that Eric Dickerson is one of my close friends. I love him. He says he loves me. It just happened, and it's unique.
You know,
we
were discussing yesterday who's the leader on the Dallas Cowboys defensive side if Mike is not around. And we all believe Dak is the leader on the offensive side of the ball. And then we were trying to come up with that idea, and I was like, do they have to like each other? If there's two different guys that lead on each side of the ball, do they have to like each other, or do they have to respect each other and think, I know he's going to get the job done? I think that's a big deal. And whenever the defense believes their quarterback can do the job, I think they can move some things.
Expectations are what makes championship teams. Andre Tippett was the parallel for Lawrence Taylor in my days, right? And he played with my teammate with the Patriots. And one time, and we were good friends. He liked me. I got lucky. He liked me. The guy was phenomenal. I couldn't block him on my best day. Not a chance at all. But he would take it easy on me. We were friends. And so one day we're playing somebody, I don't know who it was, in Foxborough, and I missed my block. And, man, I heard Tip holler at me, man, get your block. Man, he got after my fanny. And I was like, it didn't embarrass me. It motivated me because I knew he really wanted me to do my best and not mess up so that we could win. So it, you don't have to be best friends. You just have to respect each other and have the same goal in mind, and then you'll accept it.
And Craig, we appreciate the time very, very much. The Pony Express Award, like we were talking about, presented by the Pony Express Huddle Foundation. And then this weekend, SMU kicks off their season at Ford against East Texas A&M. Anything else you want us to know? Anything else we need to know before we get on out of here?
No, man. Thank you, guys. It's awesome. You guys do a great job. This is really cool to be in here with you all, and it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There you go. Craig James right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we'll do the C Block starring Corey Majors right here on The Fan.